Hi everyone, Bradley here, co-host of Whale Hunting. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We've had a great time recording our first season, a whole 20 episodes chatting to former spies, hostage negotiators, authors, and plenty of journalists about their most interesting work on corruption, money, and power. This week, I wanted to share an episode from another show I think you'd enjoy, the 404 Media podcast. It's from the team at 404 Media, who report new stories from the tech frontier, from hacking to AI, surveillance, and cybercrime. Enjoy and look out for the next episode of Whale Hunting. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time.
Hello, and welcome to the 404 Media podcast, where we bring you unparalleled access to hidden worlds, both online and IRL. 404 Media is a journalist-founded company and needs your support. To subscribe, go to 404media.co. As well as bonus content every single week, subscribers can also get access to additional episodes where we respond to their best comments. Gain access to that content at 404media.co. I'm your host, Joseph, and with me are 404 Media co-founders Sam Cole.
Hi.
Emmanuel Mayberg.
Hey, what's up?
And Jason Kebler.
Hello, hello. I'm recording in undisclosed location, so if it sounds different, it's first mic try.
It's good that you are bringing up security, because the first story we're going to talk about is about a hacker world war. This is one I wrote. Inside the Com World War, robberies, brickings, and drama. I'll open this with the story of a particular robbery. So sometime recently, there's a very, very sleepy English village. You know, it has idyllic cottages, a little local parish council building, very stereotypical. But it very quickly became a flashpoint in this hacker cyber beef, essentially, that has bled over into physical violence. So on this day in, I think, March, a gang of four 16 and 17-year-old teenagers, they're all in black hoodies, sweatpants, coats, beanies. They travel from London to this village in the early morning, and they're armed with imitation weapons, some real weapons. I'm not sure whether they were guns or knives, but that's what I learned at the time. And they go and they rob a house there. And they get away with, I think, some watches and a computer, potentially a games console as well. Now, that sounds pretty ordinary on the face of it, right? Oh, okay, some people traveled and they went and robbed someone for their watches, so what? But the reason it's interesting is because it is part of this online community called Com, which I'll define in a minute, but also a much broader conflict inside Com. So over the past few weeks and months, there has been this brewing fight between different members of this community. They're doxing each other. They're threatening each other. They're throwing bricks through each other's windows, and they're robbing each other in this case as well. And we'll get into it, but very briefly, Com is sort of a nebulous online entity or culture, is sort of the way I phrase it, that centers around SIM swapping, fraud, hacking, and increasingly so, physical violence. Jason, I'll bring you in a second, but just before we do that, here is a brief clip of one of those recent attacks.
Let's say this recording for the entity.
The entity was here, bitch!
Yeah, so that is footage that was shared inside Com of one of these brickings. Jason, you've been editing a lot of my Com stories. This isn't the first that we've covered this. Did this one feel different to you? Sort of what stood out? Or
yeah, I mean, the quotes in this are very good in terms of, you know, this is part of the headline, but someone said it's a Com world war, which is obviously, it's not actually a war, but it is violent, and there's these violent robbings and brickings and threats and so on and so forth. I think something that was really interesting to me is that you've written about calm a lot, as you just described, this sort of nebulous culture. And this is infighting, but because the groups aren't that defined, I would imagine that this is starting to define some different groups within COM. It's like there is, I don't even know if you describe it as a turf war, but there is a war. There is like, people are on different gangs, different sides. And to me, it feels like lines are starting to be drawn from this very nebulous thing to something that's maybe a little bit more defined because of who is fighting who.
Yeah.
Is that fair or no?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely getting more concrete through the actions, right? I guess to give a little bit of context of how this all started and COM. So people enter this online community, COM for short. That's how they refer to it. They enter this through playing Minecraft or Roblox. They'll be playing those games, and then somebody will say, hey, come to my server. Then they get invited to a Discord server or a Telegram group chat or something like that. And very quickly, very rapidly, they can get invited and involved in all sorts of crime. That's generally how people join it. What has happened recently is that sort of the crimes there have increased in, I guess, sophistication, but also in scale. You know, some of these people are linked to massive hacking incidents and data breaches. There's the one on Electronic Arts that I reported a long time ago at this point while we were still at Motherboard. The hack of NVIDIA as well. And then maybe not most recently, but like the last high profile one was MGM Resorts, which is obviously the casinos in Vegas, and they suffered this massive ransomware attack. That is linked to COM. As for how we get to this world war, and like we even debated whether to put that in a headline, because it's obviously a slight exaggeration on COM's part, but it's a quote from them. This is how they're seeing it, and I guess it's fair game for that reason. But what has happened is that somebody in COM started doxing other members. They would make these Telegram channels, they would resurface these old arguments, they would create new beefs as well, and it just seemed to boil over to the point where everybody was attacking everybody else.
Right. So in the video we just watched, they say at the beginning, this is for the entity. Do you want to describe or explain what the entity is?
Yeah, the entity is one of these, I guess, characters that has popped up during this recent conflict, where they make a Telegram channel, they give themselves a name. In this case, it's the entity. In other ones, there's been the battle or COM Reform 2024. And all day, every day, this person or group of people are just posting docs of other COM members. They're flexing on one another. They will upload images of Bitcoin wallets to show how much money they have, all of that sort of thing. And there was a mass of speculation inside COM, inside this broader hacking community, of who may be the entity. Or another one was the Punisher as well. And you can hear that the names again are over the top. It's almost like a pantomime in some ways. And I think ordinarily we wouldn't really pay much attention to it, like, oh, it's kids being dramatic and theatrical. But it's when there's a clear spike in violence with those robberies and the brickings that, oh, this is actually a story. Yeah.
How are they documenting this? And I'm talking about COM Drama Alert or whatever it is. And then also Emmanuel knows the most about Drama Alert as a concept. So I guess I want to hear, Maybe Emmanuel, can you take us through what Drama Alert is first, and then Joseph, you can talk about how this works with COM.
Please.
Drama Alert is a massive Twitter account, mostly, that is managed by Keemstar. I forget, does anybody remember the full name? Does anybody remember his full name?
I looked it up and I was like, nobody knows that. I'm just going to put him as Keemstar.
Keemstar has a name. I thought it was just Keemstar.
Yeah, his real name is out there.
Yeah, and Keemstar comes out of the world of like Halo and Call of Duty beefs, and he just used to like stir that up and tweet about it and make YouTube videos about it, and that turned into a Twitter brand that is covering drama more broadly. And weirdly, I think got into like some alien coverage recently. But
beef between the aliens, or beef between like the government and the aliens,
just like straight up, no beef, just like, hey, is this video of a balloon an alien? He got into that world a little bit, but yeah, it's just you know, much like the T channels on YouTube, but much more focused on YouTubers and gaming in general.
Yeah. So very loud, very brash, latching onto beef, latching onto drama. Now imagine that, but somebody made a Telegram channel just for beef inside the com, and that's how you come to com drama alert. And you know, they're also just trying to play for attention. They will upload videos that other people have shared or that they've received of the brickings and all of that sort of thing. You have to take what they say with a pinch of salt, because they admitted to me that sometimes it's not true. But they do basically provide a funnel of information related to this massive community. I mean, there are thousands of people inside COM, and to be clear, not all of them are criminals. Some of them are going to be people just hanging out on Discord. Some are going to be gamers. Some are actually going to be victims of sextortion or extortion as well. But it is a pretty damn large community. So that's how it's being documented. And beyond that, I mean, I guess that leads to how I investigate it a little bit, because as I said, com drama can't always be trusted.
You're not just taking things directly from com drama alert and putting them on our website.
Yeah. I'm just a direct feed between com drama alert and 404 media.
Yeah. But I did want to ask, like, how does, cause these people are lying and exaggerating constantly. And they're also sharing all of these videos across a bunch of different platforms. And then there's also com drama alert that's sharing videos, and you sort of take this stream of constant stuff happening in chat rooms and, you know, across different platforms and different channels, and then turn it into reportable, verifiable facts. So yeah. How do you do that?
Yeah. When you talk to people, they can be full of it, so you have to be very, very careful, which is why I sort of barely quote anybody from COM, like in these stories or even previous ones. We rely mostly on the videos and verifying those. So for example, that robbery that I opened the episode with, there was a photo of that going around on Telegram where people were saying, hey, this particular hacker from COM just ordered this robbery of another hacker in COM. And I'm like, that's interesting. Okay, let me try to figure out what happened. I took the photo of it's the police detaining those teenagers outside a pub. And I figured out where that photo was taken. This particular pub it was taken outside, the village it was taken outside. I did that because there was a particular logo on one of the buildings nearby, and I found it on Google Street View, confirmed, okay, that's in this village at this angle. I then figured out what the local police force was, and that would have been, I think, the Suffolk Constabulary in the UK. I asked them, look, I'm following this online group. There's reportedly been a robbery approximately this date. Can I have your statement? Have you seen this? And kind of to my surprise, they provided very detailed information that, you know, the police responded at 8:30 this time. By 8:45, they stopped a taxi. So it was really crazy to see something on my screen in Telegram, which is where I spend a ton of my time just talking to hackers, and then confirming that COM and its tentacles are reaching out into the real world, as in these police officers have just told me, yes, this actually happened. And then I obtained more footage as well, verifying the incident. But it was it's basically that this stream of videos and photos and whatnot come out of COM. I take them, and I can't verify all of it, but I verify what I can. And that includes the brickings and the robberies and all that sort of thing. So we've been focused on this world war. And I guess the reason for that is that it provides, I think, a snapshot in time of what Calm is doing, what it's capable of, and how this community is sort of spiraling out of control. But recently, Calm was mentioned, to my surprise, to be honest, in a 60-minute segment. Jason or anyone else, did you see that? I didn't watch the full thing, but I saw it going around on Twitter, the 60-minute segment.
I did watch it. At least I scanned through it. I mean, I thought it was interesting because it does show that kind of yet again, you've been reporting about this for a very long time, and these stories have gotten pick up and people have talked about them and said, you know, like, these are good and important stories. But I think that when 60 Minutes does it, that's like the most mainstream of mainstream news. And I think that that shows that this has left the discords and has left Telegram, and it now has the eye of the FBI, as you sort of mentioned in this piece. Like, you report that the FBI is investigating this. The 60 Minutes show calls it Scattered Spider, which is what a few different cybersecurity intel threat intelligence groups have dubbed Calm. It's like interchangeable term, I guess, at this point.
Or at least there's overlap. Like, it's messy, but yeah, Scattered Spider is the term that, like, the FBI and CISA, the US government, uses, yeah.
Right, and then I was going to ask, and this is an interrelated question, it's like, in my experience, the cops do not generally know how to handle hackers beefing with each other, and they also don't know how to handle the physical threat that is sort of like offered by hackers, sort of when people do SWATs. And to be clear, they're not doing swatting here, although they used to. They're like physically going to people's homes or having someone go to their homes and throw bricks through their window or torturing them, in some cases kidnapping them, in some cases. Like, this is very serious stuff. Not that swatting isn't, but I'm saying this is an escalation even from swatting, because swatting can be done from behind a computer. And I guess I'm wondering, how are cops approaching this? Because the 60 Minutes segment does talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah. I guess first off, the 60 Minutes segment was more broadly about ransomware, which, of course, when hackers break into a company or network and they start locking down machines until somebody pays a bounty in Bitcoin. And the reason that Calm came up is because, as I said earlier, they're generally connected to the MGM Resorts one. So, like, Calm is just a small part of that broader episode. But in the 60 Minutes show, you know, they mentioned that NSA is taking ransomware actors more seriously, and they bring up Calm, which I think is going to alarm a lot of members, now being on the biggest show in the US, right? Like, their parents are going to see this, their grandparents are going to see this, quite literally, because we're talking about young people, if not children, in some ways. More broadly about how police are handling it, I recently went to a conference on the West Coast run by, I think, the Hewlett Foundation and the Aspen Institute. And there was a senior FBI official. And I asked him about Calm, like, what are some of the challenges in actually trying to deal with this very difficult adversary? That, like, it's not a nation state, obviously, they're not that sophisticated, but they're just audacious and crazy and brazen, and they don't really care. And how do you deal with that? And the answer wasn't particularly satisfactory, but they said that they rely heavily on, like, their local and their state partners. And that's what we've seen, where there was a guy arrested a couple of years ago at this point, I think now, who was shooting houses on behalf of Calm members, and he got 12 years in prison. And although the FBI is involved in that investigation, I think local police were as well. And that also applies to the arrest of an alleged SIM swapper and Calm member, because there was a lot of, like, local authorities involved in that as well. So, I mean, that's the challenge, right? It's like, when was the last time you ever heard of, like, a decentralized criminal entity? And even that is inaccurate, because it's more of a culture than an entity or a group in its own right. I've never heard of that, really. And that's going to be a crazy hard problem for law enforcement.
It reminds me of Anonymous, but with a physical crime component.
Yeah, that's actually that's a really good comparison. Yeah, anonymous, but like these people aren't ideological. They just care about flexing their Bitcoin, their sports cars, and their videos from the club and that sort of thing. All right, let's leave that there. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of Jason's stories about whether Google and its AI is actually doing good for science. We'll be right back after this. All right, and we are back. This is, as I said, Jason's story. Is Google's AI actually discovering millions of new materials? So in November, Google's AI division DeepMind, they published this press release saying that it's helped discover, quote, millions of new materials. But now researchers have dug through what DeepMind apparently discovered and are, quote, yet to find any strikingly novel compounds. Jason, what is the main argument from these new researchers who are criticizing Google's work?
Yeah. So first of all, this is my favorite type of story, which is where Emmanuel sends me something and I miss it. And then days later, I see something and say, hey, Emmanuel, we should write about this. And he says, I sent this to you days ago. what were you doing? And then he very graciously let me do it because he was out last week. But I think this actually builds on some of the reporting that Emmanuel has been doing along the lines of like AI entering science more broadly. Like we've talked about it on this podcast a little bit, but AI being used in Google Books, AI being used in scientific papers, so on and so forth. And it's part of this broader discussion of the role that AI can play in science. So the specifics of this study were DeepMind, which is Google's deep learning, like huge, huge, huge AI outfit, as you said, did this study and published in November in Nature, which is one of the top two journals in science, possibly the number one journal in science, depending on who you ask. So it's a very big deal. And they said that they had discovered 2.2 million new crystals. And in the press release, they called this materials. And these are inorganic compounds. So not like life forms, or we're talking about just like types of materials that could exist in the world.
Which would be a very big deal, right? Obviously.
Either way, it's a big deal. I say this because it's like the context for this is like these could be used for new types of batteries. They could be used, like there should be some sort of utility that could be deciphered from the fact that they have discovered these like new types, new chemical structures for types of materials. And I'm also going to preface this with, I'm not a material scientist. This is extremely like complicated stuff. And I talked to four different material scientists about it. And even they sort of disagree on some of the terminology here and what was actually discovered, so on and so forth. But the main argument is that in this sort of rebuttal analysis published last week by two, you know, very, very well-respected material scientists, they were basically like, DeepMind didn't discover new materials. They proposed new potential structures, like chemical structures, for things that one day could possibly become materials. And their argument is that for something to be quote-unquote material, it needs to be new, it needs to be useful, and it has to be a credible like chemical structure. And from what I understand, it's like DeepMind found 2.2 million new potential chemical structures. Of those, 380,000 of them were potentially stable, meaning that they weren't like radioactive, they wouldn't just like they weren't sort of like farcical on its face. And then of those, these scientists went and took a sort of like random subset of those and started analyzing them and found that a lot of them were very similar to chemical structures that already exist, but sort of had like an element replaced in them somewhere, which doesn't mean that there's no potential utility there, but essentially they were saying like, we kind of knew about these, like we knew about most of these.
So was Google exaggerating? I mean, that's not their words, right? But is that one way to interpret it?
I think that it's fair to say that the claims were huge. It's like the claim is like, we discovered all of these materials, and the claims that are made in the press release are bigger than the claims that were made in the scientific paper, which is very common in science, where there's like a scientific paper that's very carefully worded, and then the press release kind of blows that out of proportion a little bit. And
probably,
then
probably written by different people.
Right. Yeah. And then the news reports on the press release are like even more exaggerated often, sort of depending. And so this was like a big deal when it came out in November. Like Google said that this represented 800 years worth of human research. Like it was the equivalent of doing 800 years of human research. They also said that it was, quote, an order of magnitude expansion in stable materials known to humanity. And this is not like a perfect one-to-one analysis, but it's like it's what's happening is a very similar thing to what's happening with AI more broadly in sort of like the written field, the graphical field, creative fields, etc., where there is a flood of information coming from AI. It's like there are material scientists who sit in laboratories, and these are not rubes. These are not people who are like, oh, I never thought to use machine learning, or I never thought to use artificial intelligence, or I don't think that we should use artificial intelligence for science. These are people who think that they should use artificial intelligence for science, but that the way that it is used should be directed by people who know more about how these things could be useful in the real world, which is to say, rather than proposing 380,000 random structures that sort of floods the zone with just tons of possible materials that may or may not work, that say, proposing many fewer ones that are more targeted and guided toward a potential use, or that take into account sort of like known science, would be a lot more useful. But it would be, then Google couldn't say like, hey, we found 800 years worth of materials.
Yeah, it's generated, maybe noise is too mean, but I'm going to say that.
The scientists were a lot meaner than you're being. Like, the scientists were being very mean, and then they would like kind of pull it back and be like, well, we don't want to seem like we're anti-AI, because we're not. We're anti the claims that were made in this paper, and anti the way that this has been sort of like framed by Google and in the press.
Can I say my favorite quote from this story?
Please.
I think Jason knows this already, but one of the scientists said, in the DeepMind paper, there are many examples of predicted materials that are clearly nonsensical, not only to subject experts, but most high school students could say that compounds like H2011 do not look right. It's like, this is the spiciest thing like a scientist can say, is like, you guys fuck this up so badly that like a high schooler would know that this is wrong.
That's insane coming from a scientist.
That's so.
I feel fine now. I thought I was like on the edge. It's like, no, these guys are like beefing
hard. Yeah, and you can tell they want to say more than that, you know, and it's like, you know, they're being measured about it.
Super briefly, I'll just say two other quotes from, I think this is what they told you, Jason. They say, the Google paper falls way short in terms of it being a useful, practical contribution to the experimental material scientists. And then the second one is, we actually think that Google has missed the mark here. What did Google say when you contacted them?
So Google said a lot of stuff on background, which was very annoying to me, because they provided tons of information that I would have liked to have quoted. And then I was like, why can't I use this? Because it's very specific. And then
it's also about a public study.
And then they provided a sort of brief statement that was like, we stand by the study. And I'm allowed to paraphrase the background stuff, so I'll talk about it. But basically, one of the criticisms of the Google paper was that a lot of these chemical structures could only exist at absolute zero, which is 0 degrees Kelvin, and which is like does not exist in the real world. And like, so a large number of them are simply impractical for that reason. And Google was like, well, we were clear about that in the paper. It's like, we know that these couldn't really exist. And then I think a very useful rebuttal from scientists who have been critical of Google in this case say, like, there's already 50,000 unique crystalline inorganic compounds, but we only know the properties of a fraction of these. So it's not very clear to me why we need millions of more compounds if we haven't yet understood all the ones we do know. And I think that is the crux of this to me, as I understood from talking to the scientists. It's like, there are many, 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 many materials that scientists would like to explore and, you know, develop into potentially useful things that could be used for better technology, better, you know, drugs, better weapons, better shields, so on and so forth. And I bring up that because Department of Defense funds a ton of material studies. I actually went to a materials lab back at Motherboard where they were developing like a new type of like metal to absorb bomb blasts. And so I just watched this guy like making proprietary materials and then exploding them in this glass case, which was pretty cool. But you know, this was many years ago, but that guy had all of these things that he needed to actually test, and he didn't have enough time to actually go and test them. And so if you are just proposing millions of materials when we have all of these potentially useful materials that are simply awaiting the time and resources to test them, it's not clear that that is actually helpful. And I think that that is, that's the same thing that we've been talking about with AI and every other field as well, where it's like when you flood a human dominated space with an order of magnitude more stuff, it just becomes really hard to wade through that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, apart from that consequence, sort of what is the main takeaway here? Is it that just like AI obviously could be very useful for science, but it's being like misapplied, or like what's sort of the main takeaway from that?
I mean, I got the sense that it's similar to what we talk about, where AI is a shiny object and there's so much funding and hype and research going into AI that it is kind of sucking up the oxygen from other types of research, or even more targeted but less sexy forms of AI. And these scientists feel like, you know, it's probably pretty hard as a material scientist to write a paper that gets accepted by Nature and then that is published and it is widely written about by mainstream press and tech press and science press. It's like it's hard to do that. And I think when Google hops in and says like, hey, we've reinvented material science and we've done 800 years of human research, like, ha ha ha, what if... and gets all this attention. It's really annoying to these scientists. And who cares if they're annoyed necessarily, but it's like they think that the attention, the resources are sort of being dominated by this group that is not... Like, Google is new to material science, you know?
Yes. I know this is not what Google did, but it seems... sort of applicable. It's almost just like they brute forced like Well, let's, instead of H2O, let's do H2O11111. Okay, there we go. We've added that to the list now. That can be possible. And I know that's not exactly what it is, but that sound, that seems to be a bit of the sentiment coming from the research.
That's simplistic, but that's what they did. That's right. What AI does. That is, as in, yeah, they're brute forcing like every possible like theoretical chemical structure that it's like, okay, well, this could work according to the LLM or according to the machine learning in this case. It's not an LLM, but it's an AI, and like, well, publish that, like that could be good. And then, yeah, as Sam said, you have like high school level chemists who probably could look at some of this stuff and say, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah. Very strange. All right. We'll leave that there. But I'm sure we'll keep an eye on all of the other sort of misleading and egregious stuff that AI is being used for. Obviously, we do that all of the time. If you are listening to the free version of the podcast, I'll now play us out. But if you are a subscriber, we're going to talk about, let's say, the latest evolution of AI and hardware. You can subscribe and gain access to that content at 404media.co. As a reminder, 404 Media is journalist founded and supported by subscribers. If you wish to subscribe to 404 Media and directly support our work, please go to 404media.co. You'll get unlimited access to our articles and ad-free version of this podcast. You'll also get to listen to the subscribers-only section, where we talk about a bonus story each week. Another way to support us is by leaving a 5-star rating and review for the podcast. That stuff really helps us out. This has been 404 Media. We will see you again next week.